This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho, featuring inspirational and fascinating personal stories of people from all corners of the globe who are now in St. Louis. We'll take a look at the U.S. through newcomers' eyes, get some insight into world history and cultures, and maybe learn something about ourselves. Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Hey, welcome back to Stories of New Americans here on News Talk STL. I'm joined today by Zoran Lazic, who's from Serbia.
That's right.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And as usual, I like to kind of set the scene geographically where Serbia is on the map. Can you tell us like where it is and what countries it borders?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, the Serbia is landlocked and border with Hungary to the north, Romania and Bulgaria to the east, North Macedonia to the south, Croatia, Bosnia, Montenegro to the west, and also it borders Albania through this region of Kosovo.
A lot of countries.
Yes. So, like I said, landlocked. Really, really important to remember if you ask me what kind of food I like because it's landlocked.
Okay, so not a lot of seafood, probably.
Yes, no seafood.
All right, we'll get into the food a little bit later. And the population is about 6 or 7 million, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 7 million last time I checked.
Last you checked. Okay. Now, you know, in the Balkans, I guess we can call that, right?
Right.
And as a lot of other countries in that region, it was sort of other populations and countries and powers came and went, Greeks, Romans, Ottomans, Bulgarians. But we could talk about history all day, but you don't really have time. And yeah. I want to talk about you and your story. So let's just jump ahead to Yugoslavia, because I'm sure a lot of people have heard of Yugoslavia, but Serbia was part of Yugoslavia.
That is correct.
For several decades. Can you talk about when Yugoslavia was formed and what countries it formed?
Right. So Serbia was its own country for a long time. After World War II, since there's been lots of wars in that area, Balkan Wars, you know, war against Turks, Ottoman Empire, Austro-Hungary. But after World War I, Serbia lost, like, you know, I think about 30% of population at the time.
Yeah, 28% of its population was killed in World War I.
Yes, and about 75% of the male, like, they were killed in the war. Serbia really, you know, fought through that war, and after the war was done, they were thinking, like, okay, we're small, you know, we are weak, we probably need, you know, some help. And since, you know, Serbian, Croatian, Bosnian, it's about same language with different dialect, and they're all Slavs, South Slavs. They decided to form a country, and the name of country at the time was Kingdom of Serbs, Croatian, and Slovenian. And then they changed that name, what year was it, but before World War II, to Yugoslavia, which means South Slavs.
Yeah, so Yugo, or Yug, means South.
Right.
And so it's literally the land of the South Slav. That's
right.
Interesting. So it's Bosnia, Croatia, Serbia, and what are the other countries?
So, yeah, Serbia, Croatia, Bosnia, Slovenia, Montenegro, and North Macedonia.
North Macedonia.
Yep.
And you said Bosnia, Croatian, Serbian languages are pretty close?
Yep, pretty close, like same language, different dialect. Yeah. Montenegro, so in Montenegrin, which, I mean, which it's, yeah, it's same as Serbian. It's most likely like a Serbian. And then Macedonia, a little different, like probably mixed between Serbian and Bulgarian. And then Slovenian is totally different.
Really?
Slovenian is more like a German, between German and, you know, so it's...
Kind of borders Austria.
Yeah, borders Austria, that's right. Yeah.
Did you travel to these other parts?
I did. I did travel all the time, vacation in Croatia all the time, Montenegro, Croatia. I play basketball, so we play games all over, not just Yugoslavia, but we play all over Europe. So I travel a lot playing basketball.
Yeah, we're going to get into that a lot, your sports career. So Tito was the president of Yugoslavia, basically from, I think, 48 or when after the war to when he died in 1980.
That is correct.
And what can you tell us about President Tito?
I mean, I was young when he passed away, but he was self-proclaimed long-life president. Marshall of the country. So
he, president for life.
President for life, yes. And he was there, you know, during World War II. He was leader and became president, and he was president till he died. So he lived a long life. And like I said, I think I saw him once. I was really young, kind of barely remember, but, you know, it was a big deal when he passed away because people were scared what's going to happen next, who's going to be leader, because there was nobody that strong leader like he was, and he was making all decisions himself. So people are really scared what's going to happen. And I remember when he passed away, when announced he passed away, that everything stopped, like soccer games stopped. It was 3:05. I don't know. It was really sad when he passed away, but they announced that he passed away. And so soccer game was a big soccer game stopped. Everybody stopped at the time. And then for years, they had a siren every on his anniversary 3:05, and everybody
3:05,
was
5. You remember that?
You can't forget it.
I was in Japan when Emperor Hirohito died in 1989, and the same thing happened. Everything, all of our school activities, we were planning a cultural festival. Everything was canceled. I remember the anchor people on the news wore black for weeks. Everything was very somber for a long time.
Right.
Tito was unique because he, you know, Europe kind of divided into East and West after the war, with the war, and, you know, there was NATO countries and the Warsaw Pact countries, but Yugoslavia was neither fish nor fowl.
So during World War II, in Yugoslavia was communist country, but it was like, I think they call it like socialist country, which is like a modern way for communist. And during World War II, they really had a close ties with Russia. And actually Russians were coming helping end of the war during World War II. But then after a couple of years later, there was a conflict between Tito and whoever was Stalin at the time. Then they kind of broke out. So Tito was kind of in the middle, you know, because the West was trying to, push and give money to country not to be communist. And then also East was trying to do same thing. So he was kind of between trying to not go either side, but then kind of enjoy all the freedom between. So it was not stereotypical communist country, like neighboring country like Romania and other ones, because, you know, people were traveling to different countries, have passports. And it was, like I said, a modern version of communist country.
And it sounds like he really pulled it off, because from what I hear, the economy was strong, people had jobs, you had vibrant cultural life, you had
people were happy at the time, you know. And I'm not an expert, I don't know how that happened, but only problem is after he passed away, apparently he did take lots of loans from different countries, and after he passed away all the other countries were asking for loans back, and it was the big problem there. So, and I think that was the way other building, houses and buildings, and getting people to live there. So,
and you mentioned that, he was president for life, and there was nobody kind of in the running to take over when he
died. Because it was all committee of people that were running everything. So, I don't think he wanted anybody strong to be his helper. And so after he passed away, that it was like up in air, what's gonna happen, he was gonna take over. And so it was really people were really scared at the time,
and that's what, you know, kind of led the inflation you mentioned, the loans coming due, and the economic problems. And then there were, you know, from what I understand, that during Tito's time, it was illegal to, what we might call hate speech. You couldn't talk about, couldn't use, Yugoslavia was such a multi-ethnic, multicultural, multi-religious country. And we're going to talk about how, for most of history, people got along just fine. But it was politicians and other people that sometimes would set people against each other. So he kind of put a stop to that. But after he died, people came out of the woodwork.
Right. Yep. That is correct.
Yeah. Well, let's go. I want to talk about you. And I know you were really young when he died, but let's talk about your childhood. You were born in the capital or near the capital,
Belgrade? No, I was actually, I was born in capital, Belgrade.
Okay.
And I was raised in a sub-area of Belgrade, a town named Obrenovac.
Okay.
It's like a St. Charles to St. Louis kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, so in like Serbia, in fact, Serbia is 120, I mean, U.S. is 127 times bigger than Serbia.
Mm.
So Serbia is really small, size of Colorado maybe, you know. But I did have a really happy childhood. Like my parents, we get married. When they get married, they didn't have much, but we didn't eat it, you know. So first, like when my parents get married, because they're, my father was actually born before World War II, and my mom was born during World War II. So they went through some hard times, and they were actually both raised on a farm. And then after they got married, they both live in a city, and they had jobs. But they didn't have a like house, you know. They didn't know, like, you couldn't get a loan to buy a house, right? So when I was about 2 years old, they actually bought a house from a family member, and that's where actually that house was house that my grandfather built it. You know, it was just basic. We didn't even have running water or bathroom in the house when we first moved in. Actually, we had to put it in. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, they started from nothing, from scratch, and, you know, went, you know, build more stuff for us.
What kind of work did your father?
So my father was, he actually retired working at a gas station. So he worked at a gas station for 45 years. And my mom was tailor. She worked one of the biggest factory in Belgrade, and was they actually making like a jeans and denims and pants for Lee Cooper, actually the American company. Yeah,
we have this image of, you know, people behind the Iron Curtain in '60s and '70s being willing to sell their soul for a pair of Levi's jeans,
right?
Because it was so. I guess maybe I'm talking about the Soviet Union more than
you. Well, you know, no, yeah, I mean, Levi's were expensive. I remember it was $110. Dollars at a time, which when you look right now, I cannot pay 110 anymore for my jeans. But yeah, but they did have, you know, factories. And like I said, people did live good life at a time.
What was your school like?
Actually, we live across the street from the school. And that's where my brother still lives in that house. But school is like here you have elementary and middle school. Over there, it's one big school. And since we don't have that many schools, we have lots of kids to go to school, they have two different shifts. So people either go to school from like 7:30 to 1:30, and then from 1:30 to 7:30.
Okay.
And then every week, my school at least, switch. So 1 week you go morning, and the other week you go afternoon.
Wow. Did they ultimately build another school to handle
that? They did, but there's more people, so they're still doing the same way, you know. So they're not building as many schools as here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I know you have been playing basketball for a long time. Did you play, did your high school have a basketball team, and was there a league?
It's clubs, more clubs, you know. So actually, when I was fourth grade, I started playing volleyball, and but by accident, because my brother actually started playing volleyball, and he was 1 year older than me. But then when I was sixth grade, people from basketball saw me, and it's like, oh, why don't you try playing basketball? I was tall at that time too.
Oh, you were?
Like in Europe, everything is year-round, so it's really hard to play two sports at the same time, which is great here. You can, you know, kids can play more sports because there are different seasons. But I started playing basketball, and I liked it, and I started getting better really fast. So I, you know, picked basketball over volleyball.
How tall were you when you were?
Had it. Sixth grade, probably like 6'5". Yeah.
How tall are you now?
6'9". 6'9" right now. Yep.
All right.
But you know, the club that recruited me is one of the best clubs in Europe, Partizan from Belgrade. And it was really honored playing for them. And, you know, it was one of the reasons that I kind of stick to it.
Okay. Well, I think we need to take our first break here. So let's do that, and then we'll come back and pick up the story when, you know, where we left off. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on 101.9, 94.1.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL. Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Arnell's Hardwoods. For all of your laminate and hardwood flooring needs, call them at 314-397-3252.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by the Indoor Comfort Team. For all of your heating and cooling needs, call the Indoor Comfort Team at 314-230-9542.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Welcome back. We're talking with Zoran Lazic from Serbia. He was telling us about how he started playing basketball when sixth grade elementary school or middle school. And then now let's jump a little bit ahead. When you were in high school, you got an offer to come here, right?
That's right. Absolutely. Right. Yeah. So just playing basketball, you know, like I said, for one of the best clubs in Europe, we travel a lot playing often in Italy and France and Spain and all different countries. And I actually came here in the United States right after eighth grade, and we play in Milwaukee. We stay in Wisconsin University for a month and play a tournament over there.
How did you do?
We did good. I mean, we played with kids 2 years older than us because it was that bracket. And I think we lost like in semifinals, whatever. But we played a while. And actually, I had lots of offers to come to high school here, which I didn't want to. I was young.
You speak English?
I mean, I had English in school. I was, you know, I spoke some English, you know, but not that well, you know. But, you know, well enough to, you know, talk to people, you know. And thing is, like I mentioned earlier, in Europe there are clubs where you play for, and it's really like great competition. Here it depends where you go to, you know, what high school you go to, and some of high schools are good, some of them are not as good. So I was young, I didn't want to leave my family, you know, being, you know, 14, 15 years old, and, you know, to play here. So I always kind of kept in my mind, I want to, you know, maybe come to college, you know, go over that. And then when I was senior year in high school, I started getting letters. I mean, it was back in 94, which before internet was, you know, a thing. But they actually, I was surprised getting a letter from college saying, hey, you know, we saw a couple of years ago playing. You like to come?
American college?
Yes, American colleges. And I was thinking for a little bit, but then I have a friend who said, oh, let's try to go. I have actually a few friends. Well, actually, my first coach, when we came here, he kind of made some connections, and he came back like a year later. So he was in the United States, and some of my teammates came, and, you know, they tell me good things about it. So I was like, maybe, why not? Like, you know, you got your education while playing basketball, so, you know, let me try to do it. Well, you know, I know we didn't talk about this, but, you know, from 91 till 95, there was embargo, you know, in Serbia. So it was really hard to get anything. It was, you know, people not making enough money, literally making a few bucks a month. Gas station have a gas. If you want to buy gas, you have to go on a black market. People sitting on a corner with the 2 liter bottles selling gas. There's no milk or bread in the stores. It was really, really not a good scenery. So a friend of mine went to, you know, after you receive all the paperwork, you need to get a visa to, you know, come to United States. And we went to, you know, embassy, and they told us, oh, it's going to be a long line. So we actually get there like at midnight to wait for embassy to open at 7 in the morning. And we waited there for 14 hours before we were able to come in. And then once we came in, they told us, like, sorry, but at this time we are not issuing any visa to students because of all political situation and everything else.
American embassy told you that.
Right, the American embassy, yeah. Because they're...
You had an offer.
Well, I have offered a full scholarship, and I had a paper, and I think the name of form was like I-20, or I might be wrong right now, but I think it was the form, and they break everything down and tells you how much money you're gonna, you know, how much everything costs, how much room and board, and how much your scholarship covers. And even though everything was covered, they would not let me.
Where was that college?
It was in Texas. I don't remember the name right now. It was, you know, a long time ago.
So this was I don't want to go into politics or anything like that, but basically the embargo was because of the Bosnian War and
right, yes,
Serbia's perceived connection to that. So,
right.
Talk more about how that affected everyday people.
Right. So, like I mentioned, it was really hard for everyone to live because you couldn't get, you know, what you needed. And inflation was so bad that I think I read somewhere it was hyperinflation for 25 months. And then 1993, the dinar, which is dinar, yeah.
Money,
right. Recorded monthly inflation rate of 313%. I mean, it's...
That must be a world record.
I think it was because I mentioned earlier, I usually do presentation Rotary clubs or different schools about my life, and I have PowerPoint presentation, which I do have here, and I have money on the picture. It's $500 billion. So
looking at this picture,
$500 billion. Yes, and then money was not worth it. So every often they just cut three zeros and they print new money, and it was like funny. Like if you want to go get a coffee or something, or sit down or whatever, and you ask, hey, how much is one soda? And they tell you whatever, let's say $5, just make it even do. It's okay, I have $5. And then you sit for an hour or two, and then you're ready to go and pay. And they're like, oh, it's $10 now. I was like, what? I ask you. And they're like, well, inflation.
Pay at the beginning.
That's what we did. You come, how much is it? $5. You pull $5, you pay, and then you're done, you know, so.
Okay. So you were not able to come here. This is the time when, Tito had died in 1980. There was a lot of, economic problems. Yugoslavia and the Balkans, that part of the world, it's very diverse. But my understanding is that for the most part, in most of history, people did get along fine. And I remember when the war was happening, we were being told that the country or the area was full of what they called ancient ethnic hatreds. And they'd like to kill each other, and we don't need to get involved. Let's just let it go. But it really wasn't the case. Based on what many people have told me about Yugoslavia, people living, together, Tito had a motto of brotherhood and unity. Everybody was supposed to be equal. It really just seems like it was politicians and media that was kind of putting people against each other, right? And we can see that in a lot of places.
Well, yeah, I mean,
today, here.
Right. I mean, that's what happens. And like I said, I was young. I was 16 years old when this conflict started. I was sophomore high school. Did not see any of the war. Like you said, it was just politics on every side. And it was more like politicians are trying to keep their chair, keep their power. And
as usual, the people suffer,
right,
the politicians.
Right. But unfortunately, that's what happens. But, and like you said, before that, people live fine. People right now live together in unity too. Bosnia too, right? So my wife was born and raised in Bosnia. Every time we go to visit, we go to Serbia, we go to Bosnia. She's a family there. I take my brother's car with, Serbian driver's license plate, and we go over there. I ever had problem, parking in Sarajevo or whatever, and,
Yeah. We didn't mention this, and people probably already know this, but in the 90s, Yugoslavia basically fell apart, and all those countries all those republics, now independent countries.
Right.
And it, you know, some of them were more peaceful secessions than others. Bosnia was pretty brutal because it was so ethnically diverse, right in the middle of Yugoslavia.
Right.
But you're saying now it's...
Yeah, people live. I mean, like, they live in a peace, you know, and everybody's doing their job, you know, and even everywhere else, like here, too. You know, I have one of my best friends is Bosnia, another best friend is the Croatian. So, the third one is Macedonian. So, we have no issues, you know.
It's a Build-A-Bear guy?
He's from Montenegro. Okay, it's fourth one.
What about a Slovenian friend?
I have no Slovenian friend. It's a shame, but
I've never met a Slovenian.
I mean, I met people from Slovenia, but not here.
We had, well, yeah, I've never met anybody.
Right, I haven't met anyone here. So, right.
Well, then later you did come back on another scholarship.
Right.
How about that?
Right, so...
Well, before that, you played professional basketball.
Right. So I just got a little thing in my life. Like I said, I played basketball and was very successful and captain of the one best team in Europe. And all my future plans were related to basketball. But when I was 17 years old, that tragedy actually happened in my life. I lost actually my best friend, person I could always talk to and tell him my secrets. I actually lost my mother. She died only a few months after they discovered that she had a cancer. And I was not really ready for that. I was not ready to accept that she was gone. And that was one of the worst part of my life that I went through. It was really shock for my brother and me because apparently they were hiding from us and we were not ready for it. You know, and it happened so fast, you know. So I was like looking, you know, for something else. And then to, you know, do when I was there. So when I did not come to States right after school, high school, I did play basketball professionally. Yes, I did. And about three years later, the father of a good friend of mine who came, you know, here by 91 or 92, he called me again and said, hey, why don't you try go again? You know, and I said, well, you know, I was playing basketball. I opened my own sports bar. You know, I was like,
really?
Yeah, I did. It was a sports bar and I have people over. It was good. So he's like, well
by that time, the war was over and things were a little bit better.
Yes, that was
economically.
Yeah, so war stopped in 94. So, but this is 97, 3 years later. Yeah, economy was much better. People, you know, started living normal lives. So, yeah, this guy came over to my bar and he's like, well, I think you should try again. I think you will do just fine there. So I was like, well, let's try. So he had a yellow book of the colleges when he was visiting. Both of his sons were playing in New York. He had just yellow book. He's like, well, let's just pick randomly. We randomly pick five different colleges. He's going like a couple of pages here and there. And we took one of my games and he just mailed it. This wasn't going to happen. And I was lucky enough that all five coaches called me.
Really?
And they wanted me to come. And back in time, every time they mail me like paperwork that I need to obtain a visa, somehow get lost in the mail. So they have to send DHL was a thing back in the day, like FedEx is now. So they have to send. So I received a scholarship and I, you know, went to my physicals, went to embassy. I did the same thing, went at the midnight. And security is like, what are you doing here? I was like, well, I'm waiting in line. And he's like, there's no line. I was like, yep, I've been here before. I know there is a line. He's like, no, not anymore. And he was right. So I, you know, I was just went to bakery for breakfast and waiting till 7 and came back and there was no line. And I got my visa in no time. So I was really excited.
So no trouble that.
No trouble. Like it was office, like an American lady, officer in uniform. And she was talking to me and she was asking me questions, and she's like, yeah, come back at 3 p.m. to get your visa. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, come back at 3. And then she opened, like, the last page of my passport. It was a stamp that said I was denied, like, you know, 4 years later. And she looked at me, and I'm already smiling. She's like, ah, you're approved. And she put a stamp that I was approved, and that was my end. Yeah, it was a funny fact at the time, like first time I was coming, I told all my family and friends, I'm leaving in 94 and ended up not leaving. But then in 98, I did not tell anyone. I didn't even tell my father. So after I got my visa and I, you know, I went to my father's work and I was like, hey, I'm going to stay in college. And he's like, yeah, I heard the story before. And I just pulled my passport, my visa, and he's like, what do you need? I was like, I'm good. I'm leaving like in 2 weeks.
Well, tell us where you ended up going. What university?
I actually came to Missouri Baptist College because coach, he was new to college and he recruited me. And then I stayed 2 years and my coach ended up leaving after a year for better opportunity being assistant and D1. And after 2 years there, I actually transferred to Lindenwood and I graduated from Lindenwood. Unfortunately, I had four different coaches in four different years.
Really?
Of the college, but good thing is I started every single game for every coach and I played a lot, so that was a good thing.
Did you live in the dormitory?
In Missouri Baptist, I live in dormitory, but when I was going to Lindenwood, I actually requested the house because Lindenwood was buying at the time all houses around, and they had seniors living, so I actually requested the house, so I actually live in the house my junior and senior year, which was a big upgrade from dorm.
With roommates?
It was just two of us living in two-bedroom house.
Was it an American you were with?
Yeah, it was American. Like, first year, it was just some random guy I didn't know, but my senior year, I actually brought a friend of mine from Missouri Baptist, and then we ended up living, so he's still a good friend of mine, and we lived there for years, so it was really good.
How was your English at that time?
It was good. I mean, like, when I first came in, it was different. Like, it's different culture, different customs. Yeah.
Why don't we take a break here, though? We have to take one more short break, and then we're going to ask you more about any cultural adjustments you had. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on 101.9, 94.1.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL. Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Samim Afghan Restaurant, featuring traditional Afghan cuisine and conveniently located on Manchester Road in the Grove.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you by Hacking Law, for individuals who want to come and stay in the U.S. Hacking Law fights for immigrants every day. Visit them at hackingimmigrationlaw.com.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Welcome back. We're talking with Zoran Lazic about his coming to America, his coming to America story and a basketball scholarship. And you said you lived in the dorm at first in Missouri Baptist.
Right.
Did you have like a... did they assign a buddy to you, or did you have anybody that was kind of looking out for you, helping you, showing you the ropes?
No, it's kind of funny because, you know, I came here, a coach, assistant coach, and it was a guy from Slovakia who already been here in the States for a year. They actually picked me up at the airport, and him and I went to head coach. We slept there for maybe a week before we moved to dorm. But then he helped me in the beginning because he already been here for a year and we're still good friends. But after that, I mean, we were just everybody, you know, like we're still playing together. But my teammates were really good. I actually fit in right away. I always like to tell stories and I was telling stories to everyone and people, you know, had fun with that. But again, you know, I was kind of mentioning the other day to my wife, like, most of my stories in the first couple of months begin, in my country this, or my country that, because you're new to country and you try to explain how did you live your life.
Well, what were some of the things that were in your country that were not here? Or vice versa?
Yeah, so I think the biggest adjustment here is people are friendly. Like, if you don't know anyone, even like, you know, especially like in college, you know, you say, hi, how are you? But it just... not really deep relationship, right? Not deep, because you just say, hi, how are you? And I actually thought people really asking me, hey, how are you? And people like, hey, how are you? I was like, oh, and they just leave. I was like, what? What? Like, you asked?
They're talking about you.
I know, yeah. It's like they're trying to do it. I'm trying to explain how I'm doing it, and they're just leaving. But it's more like the, you know, cultural difference. Yeah. People are friendly. They'll say, hi, how are you? And they really don't think, you know, about anything about it. It's like, hi, you know, and... But like where I grew up, if you don't know anyone, you don't say hi to them. But if you know someone, when you see him that you stop, you shake hands. Yeah, how are you? You start talking. It's really like a deep conversation, you know.
Is there a sense of hospitality in Serbia like
Bosnia? Yes. So like, well, yes. So that's all former Yugoslavia. Actually, I think it's more, like European thing. People are, treated. They try to be good hosts to you when you come in and, give you food and drink and they want you to have a good time, But it's funny, like you mentioned, because I did come here in the States, in 98 with 2 suitcases and $500 in my pocket, And, I didn't have much, but I had a place to live, 3 meals a day and pay tuition. And that's all I needed at the time, And my original plan was, hey, I will come here. I'll go to college for 4 years, get my degree and go back to Europe. But also thing is, I was scared, because like, well, how am I going to do in school? I have a 4 years gap is in high school and college. And, I was like, oh, it will take me some time. But I figured out very fast with multiple choice questions and true and false questions that school is much easier.
Oh, really?
Well, right.
In Serbia, it would be more...
There's no true or false or multiple choice questions. So as long as you kind of pay attention here, you kind of get it by. So I end up being, great in college, having won a high GPA in a basketball team, yes. But... yeah, so that was my story, and I really did enjoy, playing basketball in college and meeting friends, especially like when I, going from dorm from Missouri Baptist going to house in Lindenwood, and Lindenwood, had actually bigger international group. They have some soccer players coming from Serbia, different countries, so it was really good diversity there. And then after finishing college, I started actually teaching in Limburg High School. And I was assistant teacher. I was working with ESL, English as Second Language students there. And the good thing with that is I could relate to them because I kind of went through same program they went through. But I was in college there, high school. So we really had a good relationship. And I actually ended up teaching there for 6 years.
And you were, there were a lot of Bosnian kids.
There was sometime, it was a good number of Bosnian kids, but there's kids from Asia, Vietnam, Laos, China.
And you worked with all of them?
I worked with all of them, yes. So, I try to help them understand program. I help them learning, also testing. And then since I actually, I'm pretty good in math, I spent a lot of time teaching them math. It was a good experience.
And you also, you said you were an interpreter with some of the parents of the Bosnian kids, because
you
mentioned that Serbian and Bosnian are like, it's like American same, and Canadian English.
Right, same language, yes. So I actually work, while I was working in Limburg High School, I work as interpreter for a whole entire district. Mm-hmm. So every time principal, social worker, teacher needs to talk to Bosnian parents who doesn't speak English, they call me and I'll go over there and talk to them, so... it was a good experience. I really enjoyed that.
Did you ever have any trouble? Did any of the parents, your name is identifiably Serbian.
Right.
No,
actually, parents were really happy to see someone from, country they grew up to work in school, and they can relate. I have lots of parents call me to check on progress of their kids, because if they call, American teachers, they couldn't really understand.
Yeah.
And, and some of students were kind of abusing the system, so we were just telling them, I'm doing good in school, and which when they called me, I knew, they were not.
And as far as working with the kids, I guess that was not an issue either?
No, I had a really good relationship with the kids. I helped them. Lots of kids were asking me if they can come eat lunch in my classroom, because they were like a freshman year, they didn't feel like a fit, but we worked through, I let them do that, and, we... actually, I saw a couple of my students in Costco, and and they were glad to see me and talk to me, and it was really amazing. One of the students invited me to a wedding.
Really?
And then he mentioned me, and another teacher was working with me in his speech that we were first people helping them when he came into the States, so it was a good thing.
What about when you met Americans, like, let's say, other teachers at Lindbergh, or just any Americans that you met in your life, did they How do they react when you said you were from Serbia, if at all?
Well, first, when I came in 98, just before internet was, you know, a thing, and before people were searching and looking, every time when I say I'm from Serbia, people will say, oh, you're from Siberia, Russia, I know.
Really?
Yes, lots of them. And I said, no, Serbia is between Italy and Greece, if I have to kind of make this really simple. But, or like winter times, like, oh, I'm cold. And they're like, why are you cold? It's so cold in your country. I was like, no, it's not. It's the same about, you know, this year.
Yeah.
And people kind of always try to, you know, when you say Serbia. But, I mean, since the internet became more popular, people are using it. I think people are more informed. So now when I say it, most people know.
Do they ask you about the conflicts of the 90s?
And no, I think people have short-term memories. So more is about sports right now and all success, especially lately with Nikola Jokic and Denver Nuggets becoming, you know, NBA champions.
Right.
People always relate when they see me, and especially I'm tall, and they always relate to Nikola Jokic and, you know, him being
MVP. There have been other Serbian guys in the NBA, too.
Yeah, so like, Vlade Divac was one of the first one coming in, and Peđa Stojaković, they played together in Sacramento Kings in, like, late 90s, and there was really, people knew about them, too, also. But then we also have a world number one man tennis player, Novak Djokovic, who is, Swiss also number one now, and he's been probably greatest player ever since, you know, he had most wins in tournaments and ATP wins. So people now relate with that just because, you know, it's been a long time since war, since almost 30 years.
Did you not want to go into playing professional basketball anymore after you finished?
That was my plan. Like I said at the beginning, I was going to, but then I finished college. I was 27 years old. I was dating my wife. I didn't really want to leave. And then I decided to stay. And like I said, I started teaching in Lindbergh High School, spent 6 years there, and then started working for Boy Scouts of America. Worked there over 11 years. And now I'm working for Nestle Purina. It's been 2 years there. So I really had a good career. I really enjoyed my jobs, every job that I did. So
how did you decide to go into the school district? What was your degree at?
My degree was in business. And it's just an opportunity that somebody told me about. And then I went in there and I actually, you know, I actually was never thinking about teaching, but I really enjoyed working with, you know, youth and working, helping them. So I ended up staying there for 6 years.
Great. I'm sure they really appreciated having you there for your cultural and linguistic expertise. What surprised you about life in America, besides people not knowing where Serbia is? Or
right, like when they ask you how you're doing, they go, it just like St. Louis typically is, and that's at the beginning. It was really hard. Like I didn't have a car when I first came in.
That's hard in St. Louis.
Yes, and for me it was really hard. If you want to go places, you always have to ask somebody for help. My coach was really helping me at the beginning, and then I make some friends, and they're, you know, helping with that. Then I started dating my wife, and she had a car, which is much easier. And then I thought about 2 years after I came in, I bought a car. It was a big, huge difference in, like, public transportation here in St. Louis is not really...
2 years without a car.
2 years without a car.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. But public transportation here in St. Louis is really different because in Europe, and there's different cities here in the United States that there's better, but in Europe, like, you travel with the bus, you know, because...
Or you walk more, too.
You walk and take a bus and walk a little bit, and because sometimes it's easier just taking buses just because there's no parking, you know, and you struggle to find parking. So, you know, you just get up and go, you know. So there was a difference, of course. I have all kinds of stories. I don't know if we have time, but I think one of the best stories that I tell people is finding out about all-you-can-eat buffet.
Oh.
So because that thing does not exist in Europe.
Really?
Did not exist when I was there. I'm sure now, but I was really surprised because, you know, like, you show up and it was like we were going to basketball game and we stop in all-you-can-eat buffet and coach is like, oh, yeah, take whatever you want. And I was like, I don't want to cost you too much money. And he keeps saying, take more food, take more food. I was like, what's going on here? And there was ice cream machine, which I love ice cream. And He's like, go get some ice cream. I was like, I don't want to cost you too much money. He's like, no, you can get as much as you want. So I make a big cone of ice cream. And then after I was done, he said, you get more. I was like, really? So he explained me the whole concept. So I took a dinner plate and I pull like a ice cream, like a big hill of ice cream. And then everybody was laughing. And then I actually finished that before everybody was done laughing.
Did you gain weight in your first couple years?
No, I didn't. Just play basketball. You practice all the time and you're playing. And, I did not gain weight at all.
You still play basketball now just for fun? Or
I'm coaching my son. I'm coaching two teams. My son is 13 years old, just finished seventh grade, and he's a really good player. So two teams I have, one regular team and one traveling team. I'm coaching there, and I also play when I can. Two different leagues on Saturday, Sunday, if I'm not coaching. But we travel a lot. We just got back yesterday on Sunday from Ohio. A couple of weeks ago, we were in Wichita, Kansas. Before that, Lawrence, Kansas.
This is for your son.
Yes, for my son. So he plays Under Armour League and for Knights basketball, and I'm coaching there. So we were just busy with him traveling all the time and playing basketball. So all I do, my free time every day, basketball practice or game, and that's what it is.
How tall is your son?
My son is 6'2".
6'2", 13.
He just turned 13 a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, he's
not
doing
18.
Good. Yes. He's going to be a great player.
Do you, your father is still in?
No, so yeah. My father passed away 5 years ago. Yeah.
But you have a brother there?
My brother lives there. He has four kids.
You go back sometimes?
So we go back, visit. Well, we went before COVID, started. We were going to go, but then COVID started. And this year we were really going to go, but basketball tournaments, so we couldn't make schedules. So hopefully next year, we'll see. Hopefully next year.
Are you teaching your son how to speak the language?
Yeah, so we only speak Serbian at home. And there was a rule since he was born.
Okay.
He only speaks Serbian to us. And he actually started like a preschool. He didn't speak a word English. But the teacher said it's not a big deal. We learn fast. And, today's day, he just speaks Serbian at home.
And he can be able to go back like school English.
Oh, yes. I mean, he can translate it really well. So he's good.
Yeah. Would you say basketball is the most popular sport in your country, or is it tennis, soccer?
Soccer, I'll say soccer. Most of Europe or rest of the world is soccer. Soccer is most popular, not most successful, but definitely most popular. Basketball is really big.
And water polo, too,
right? Water polo, too, yes. Good, really successful. Tennis is now because of Novak Djokovic last, 15 years.
Yeah.
But basketball is really, really popular. Like, you come to watch a game, there's 18,000-19,000 people watching Partizan playing games. So it's lots of people are watching.
Okay. Now, we have a pretty old Serbian community in St. Louis, in the Serbian church.
There's a Serbian church on Jefferson and 55 or 44, right there.
Yeah.
There's some people came here before World War II or after World War II in the 60s, 70s, and there's a big wave of people came, like after Civil War in Bosnia, so lots of Serbs came there too.
And then I think August, the first weekend of August, mm-hmm. which is coming up, is the annual Serb Fest at the church. Can you?
Yeah, so every year, first weekend of August, they have a Serb Fest, and they have a Serbian food there. People come and they usually put some program for people to see. Music, dance, folklore.
What food would you recommend people try if they go?
Cevapi is always popular. It's meat and bread. People ask me what kind of food we eat, and I say lots of meat and bread. More like Mediterranean, mixed Mediterranean, Italian food.
And it's Bosnian food.
Yeah, it's same, right. Right. Like sarma, stuffed cabbage. It's like we have used lots of pork, lots of lamb.
Yeah.
So people like meat and bread.
Not a lot of vegetarians. I don't
know. There's veggies, but people are, not many.
We're almost out of time. Do you have any final thoughts or messages or anything you'd like to say to the audience about your experience here or about America as you see it?
No, I just tell people when they approach somebody not from United States, they should really take the time to know that person, because just because the person doesn't speak maybe English very well, or it's scared or not really open to talk, doesn't mean that it's not a good person. It's probably because they are not used to talking to people first time to see them. So maybe just take interest in their life, talking to them, you know, and spending time with them will help forming the relationship.
Okay, good advice. All right. Well, Zoran, thank you for your time. This, wish me had more time as usual, but the clock is the king around here. So thank you.
All right.
Good luck with you and your son's teams. You've been listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL 101.9, 94.1.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.